There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan.
My brother from another mother.
On FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile, hour number two. Glad to have you here. Easy to get in touch with the show as well. For a phone call or a text, same digits, 251-343-0106. 251-343-0106. And like I said, put that in your contacts because live shows on every day of the week here. People right here, local folks, local station. Saturday morning, yeah, we're live. Sunday, we're live. In the evenings, we're live. So there'll be a show that probably sparks you say, I got to comment on that, or I got to drop them a line. So just keep the number handy, 251-343-0106. Also through the FM Talk 106.5 app, you can always leave us a talkback message where the microphone icon is on the front page of the app. If you'll press that, lets you record a message, emails to the show, and we can play it back here on the air. All right, I mentioned this at the beginning of the show at noon. Very excited to have Dr. Ashley McDonald on with us to talk about a super cool project right here in our own backyard. Thanks for coming in. Good to see you. And I hate that I got you off the water today. We're going to be...
That's all right. Thanks, Sean. In this heat, I appreciate not having to be on a boat for once.
I know, but I was looking at, like, tomorrow's not, but Sunday is supposed to be. It's going to be hotter than...
Right.
But it's supposed to be mill pond
right.
Slick. So.
Oh, yes. Those are the great conditions that we rarely don't get during the season that we have our platform on the water. Right now, we're actually not growing fish. We are in a hiatus for the summer.
Yeah, so you harvested. And we're going to set this up. So first of all, you are with Dolphin Island Sea Lab, PhD, doctorate, and you're also a fish rancher.
Right, correct. I'm also a fish
is that the
farmer.
Is that, well, here's,
farming,
okay, here's
ranching,
my,
all
here's my argument. So you didn't realize you can come into a show.
Here
Dr. Valentine didn't warn you. So if it's a critter,
right,
it's always been ranching.
Okay.
But people always say, yeah, they're farming fish. You are exactly saying what everybody says, but I'm like, aren't you kind of ranching them?
I mean, basically, and it's also out in the environment as well.
Yeah.
It's not inside a controlled system. This is a very uncontrolled environment, which
right,
we can get into.
I mean, yeah, this is like, you know, you turn them loose out there on the range.
Correct.
And but okay, to set this up, what we're talking about is this project. Y'all probably heard a little bit about it, but it's fun today to be able to take an in-depth dive in it. And that is this structure, this cage off what, how far out
right,
from the beach are you?
We are approximately 2 miles due south from Fort Morgan Peninsula.
Okay.
In about 33 feet of water.
Y'all have probably seen this thing if y'all run, like, you tracking, like you're going to the Three Sisters,
correct,
or something like
if
that.
We're going, yeah, to the three, to the triple rigs.
Yeah.
You'll see it out there, and you might have been wondering, what is this weird,
uh-huh,
contraption? It's got to be, you know, something, because there's some instrumentation on it. And it's just a floating rectangular pen that's about 50 feet by 24 feet. It has two fish pens floating down from that are attached to the pen. It's two meshes.
Are they like net? They're like net?
Two mesh nets.
Right.
And then around those mesh nets, we had predator mesh to keep. Obviously, anybody who's done any fishing out there knows that sharks are
it was
quite common.
It was at some point, maybe this spring, that, you know, tracking, the great white tracking. And
right,
I was looking at the great white tracking. I said,
oh,
that's right there. That's right there by the fishing
right
closure.
Right past our farm. We were keeping an eye on it, too, because we were getting in the water at the time. So we had a good eye on her and where she was going. And she swam right past our farm. So, and then ended up into the bay. So that is obviously something that we have to contend with when doing any kind of fish aquaculture offshore. You're going to have a lot of predators interested in your farms.
And they're smelling that. So we'll talk about that, how it goes, and once you put them in there and all that. But okay, you got the structure. But this is something I made a note to myself. The project sat on the shelf for a while, it seems like.
It did. The original funding came from Senator Shelby before he retired, which can give you an idea of how long this project's been waiting in the wings. He set aside some congressional funding to investigate the potential for aquaculture in the Gulf, particularly in Alabama state waters. That's where he wanted the investment to be pointed towards. And obviously his relationship, he has had a great relationship with Dauphin Island Sea Lab. Mm-hmm. So he sort of had us in mind when he set this funding aside. And we took on this project. It's just a demonstration project. We just want to see, is it feasible? Not only is it feasible in terms of, can we provide a structure that will resist the Gulf's wild intentions.
Yes. I want to get into that. I mean, heck with predators. How about wave action?
Wave action. I think there is a big misconception of the Gulf of being just this lake. I don't know where
those people are from, but yeah,
not from the Gulf.
Yes.
And so there's been, our partners are actually from New England who have helped us design. We basically designed.
So you didn't go to Amazon and order fish enclosure?
This all came from New Hampshire and New England. And they have this exact same structure successfully deployed in New England for about 7 years now, where they're growing steelhead trout, blue mussels, and kelp. And we wanted to take that exact design, transplant it down here into the Gulf, and see if we can grow out a native species. And for our native species that we're interested in, it's red drum, oysters, and a local macroalgae or seaweed species.
And that's our trinity down here. Theirs was steelhead
trout. Yep. And blue mussels.
That's their bivalve,
and
right?
And kelp, and sheer kelp.
And so here, we're redfish, oysters, and
it's a graceful redweed is the common name for it. This seaweed that we're growing.
Okay, and I want to get to where do they all stay on this platform? But before we do this, so that sat on the shelf for a while. When did you get the green light to say, hey, we're going to do this?
Approximately, I was in Florida at the time, and I was working for the university, and I got offered this opportunity to come in and become project manager and just start this demonstration project for something that has never been permitted and has never been attempted. I won't say attempted. It has been attempted. It just usually doesn't get past the permitting stage because of the complications involved with that and not really having a clear roadmap for permitting. And what our intention for this was to sort of kind of guide that roadmap so that if, say, a group of individuals wants to pull some money together and start their own farm, they sort of have a roadmap to follow in terms of permitting. And we say, we did it. We got successfully, accomplished our goals for permitting.
Well, it's kind of nice that
laid it out for them. So now we know what to do from here on out. Until that point, it was very convoluted and very complicated.
So you get the green light on this. Is that when you reached out to the people in the Northeast and said, hey, what are y'all? I'm one for copying off somebody else's paper,
Correct. And they actually approached us before I got brought onto the project. They approached us with the design because they had, like I had mentioned before, they had this successful platform that they have been running for 7 years straight. And the only change to our design is that we will not be running it year round. We have to pull our platform out of the water because we have something they don't, and that's hurricanes.
Yes.
We have a very, scary hurricane season that's unpredictable, whereas they do get northeasters and those sorts of like heavy storms and large storms, but that's not, obviously quite the same as having to deal with a Gulf hurricane. So our grow out season, we deploy in October, we stock fish in November, and we will pull in June before hurricane season truly hit. Okay. We barely made it this year.
We're gonna talk about this, how that first year went. It was, last year the fish went in there, they came out this year. We'll talk about those stats. Our guest, Dr. Ashley McDonald, you got questions about fish ranching.
I love it. I think I'm going to use that now.
Fish ranching. We'll do that when we come back. 251-343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 120 FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along, and yeah, we'll get to your text as well. Dr. Ashley McDonald, project manager, Dolphin Island Sea Lab, fish rancher, the way I see it, our guest here.
Going on my business card.
That's right, fish rancher. And all right, so this facility, let's walk, and I've got questions from the folks here we'll get to in a second, but let's walk through this. You deployed it last year?
Correct. We deployed in December.
Okay.
Of 2025.
Okay.
And we stocked fish. We had a number of delays just from, this is the first time the system has been deployed in the Gulf.
So for people to picture, they can Google it, but like walk us through, we're picturing this thing. What does it look like?
So it's, the entire structure is made out of HDPE pipe.
Okay.
In that, it's fused together, fusion welded together, which provides the flotation.
That's the buoyancy, okay.
And that's where the buoyancy is. And that is surrounded with decking and then the two fish pins and just some other pieces just help us like get around the platform safely, okay. And things like that. That platform is then moored at four points to four anchors, two to the north and two to the south. And it basically creates a system where the platform has some freedom of movement.
That's what I was wondering with waves.
Does it
have some give?
It has some give and the flexibility, obviously, because of the high energy of the environment. You've got to have some flexibility in there. So we've provided flexibility and a little bit of movement so it can go around with the currents. That's the other thing. The currents out there is... they're insane. It's mm-hmm. it's crazy how high currents can get, and just not even that far offshore, but mm-hmm. extremely strong currents and high wave action. But it's moored in four places so that if anything, there's no critical failure. You know, mm-hmm. if something happens, it's not going to go floating off and wash up in somebody's front yard on the beach
right.
or somewhere. So it will remain in place with the 4-point mooring system. And but that's really about it. It sounds a lot more technical than it really is. It's just very well engineered.
And so there's that floating structure up top, and then it's bored off. And like you said, these enclosures, these nets are hanging off the bottom.
These nets hang right? down to about 12 feet into the water.
Okay,
column.
So that's how deep they are.
Yeah.
So into that, mm-hmm. you're going to put the rancher here. You got to stock. Mm-hmm. You got to stock your pasture. So what did you do?
We started really small. Obviously, we had a lot of challenges just trying to get the platform completed and on site for the first time. And because of that, we had a lot of delays with getting our fish out. And we wanted to start with a very small amount of fish for the first season, mm-hmm. just to make sure that everything can even, you know, is going to survive.
You didn't want to put too many in there for the...
So we didn't want to put too many in there. So we started...
Put too many croakers in a live well, what happens, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So we started very small. We started with... about 4,000
okay.
to start.
And these redfish are how big?
We're going to try to stock around 6 inches.
Okay.
We, because of all the delays and our redfish continue to grow.
Mm-hmm. As they want to.
Yeah. The people that are growing our fish for us, and one of our partners is Thad Cochran Marine Aquaculture Center, which is part of the University of Southern Mississippi in Ocean Springs. So they're actually spawning red drum for us right now.
So and they're growing them in tanks.
They're growing them in tanks on land.
Okay.
And it's all a recirculating system that they're growing these fish into. They're feeding in the same diet that we intend to feed them offshore. So basically priming them for an offshore life.
Okay.
They're changing the temperature to match natural conditions that they would experience, all of that.
Oh, really?
So,
okay.
But the issue was we had so many delays. Our fish were far too large when we stocked them because it's very difficult for... putting a bunch of larger fish in a tank, putting them on a boat, getting them out offshore. Mm-hmm. It's very stressful on them. So we ended up losing quite a bit to that stress
right.
of them having just being too big. Again, your comparison with the too many croakers in a live well.
Yeah.
It's essentially very similar to the issues that we faced. So,
so what'd you left? Yeah, how many?
When we harvested, we only ended up harvesting just over 1,000 fish. So we lost quite a bit just from the stress of the stocking. But we did manage to harvest 1,000. And we harvested in June, in mid-June. But another issue...
So we, just like 2 months ago, yeah.
Exactly. And another issue we faced was that due to the stress of the situation, and it took them a while to come back from the stress of the trip over and getting stocked, they didn't grow very well. So we had a very small harvest size this year. They were under a pound, each one's.
So that put them at about 13, 14 inches?
Correct, around that, yeah.
Okay.
And that was about
you put them in, they were how many inches generally? I mean,
they were probably around 10 inches when we put in.
Okay.
So it was just a much lower growth than we had.
What was the hypothesis? Yeah, what did you think it was going to be?
Our plan, our harvest size goal is 1 kilogram, or so 2.2 pounds, is our harvest size goal. And we believe that they can reach that. They just, you know, they need the time. They need to go out earlier, sooner. That's kind of the lesson we learned this year. Go out sooner, have a more consistent feed schedule, because also...
Well, that's what I was going to get to. Are you feeding them artificially?
We are feeding them artificially.
How does it stay in if we got these mesh nets? I don't know what the width of the mesh is, but how does it...
Right. So the fish typically have such a voracious appetite that nothing gets out. Mm-hmm. There's not much waste. And you also have to dial in how much you're providing your fish so that you're not wasting food.
Mm-hmm.
Not only is it, you know, extra nutrients into the environment, it's also a waste of money. You know,
sure.
I mean, fish feed is very expensive.
Yes, it
and
is.
I'm sure you are
quite aware of
that. And so you don't want to waste your food. So you have to really do some serious observations and take some numbers and crunch your numbers and make sure that the fish feed that you're putting out is going to be consumed by your fish. And we actually have an automated feeder that we use. It's solar powered.
Okay, this is what, you know, I've got those there. I've got Texas Hunters and Sweeney's and all that with the battery and the solar panel. Are you using something similar to sling it out?
Very similar, yes. So it's a Norwegian system that they use in Norway for salmon farming. And it's solar powered, and we have just dialed it in so that it casts exactly where we want it to.
Did y'all figure that out? You go, okay, let it run. They ate it all. Or run it to a certain point and go, they didn't get it all, so the numbers in between.
Right.
Okay.
And you're also feeding a percentage of body weight. You know the average body weight of the fish in your farm. You're just taking samples and taking those numbers. And then you calculate, okay, we want to feed at 5% body weight. So this is how much feed they need to get per day. They're only eating from sunrise to sunset. So how many times do we need to, you know, cast feed to get to that number?
But they're also, you know, Dr. McDonald, they also, is the mesh too tight for all the stuff that makes this fertile crescent to
not
drift through?
All.
I mean, do
and
they get
That is a great point that we hope to address with maybe getting some grad students involved in actually doing some stabilized topes or some gut content analysis, because we know there are blue crabs in there, there are amphipods, there are all kinds of little snack items that are coming in to the system naturally. And we really want to know how much supplemental feed are they getting, and is that contributing to their growth rate? Or are they preferring these, you know, these snacks as opposed to the feed that we're providing? Because another unique part of our system is, again, you just hit the nail on the head. This is the Fertile Crescent. The Gulf is full of nutrients, full of productivity. That's one of the best things about the Gulf. It's why we have the shrimp populations we do. It's why, you know, the best seafood comes from here. And these are conditions that aren't really experienced in other areas. So like Norway, New England, they don't have the high productivity that we do. So their fish are almost relying entirely on the feed that they're getting. So this is a whole new
era. This is just guessing stuff, but it may be, like I said, I'm dealing with a PhD, scientist here, but it may be more economically feasible to raise in a place like this than it would be in these. Obviously, we're not growing salmon here. We don't have the cold water, but... Mm-hmm. That it would be a little cheaper to raise X pounds of flesh.
Right, if they're getting supplemental feed.
Yeah.
That would be great. That's definitely going to be part of our, we're doing an analysis of economic based analysis. So we want to see how much money goes into this, how much can we get out, and that's going to definitely factor in.
Good stuff.
To that analysis.
Coming right back. More with Dr. McDonald right here. And your questions, 251-343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 135, FM Talk 106.5, and Midday Mobile. This is cool. I've been watching this from a distance as the story's been posted up, but to have Dr. Ashley McDonald in, project manager at Dolphin Island Sea Lab, and fish rancher, like I've dubbed this project. But, yeah, okay, so this was this was an experiment to say, can this work?
Can it be done?
Right.
Can it be done? And that's the first question. The next question after this is going to be, can it be done feasibly? It be done so that, is it feasible enough for investment opportunities? Is it feasible enough for an independent farmer or harvester who perhaps, you know, they're running a commercial fishing business right now, and they want to supplement some income and then just grow some fish, raise some fish, some oysters and things in a way that it's easy on them. It's an easier lift on them. Just feed some fish, keep an eye on them, and collect and harvest when they're done.
Well, I mean, it's the, you know, I mean, I don't want to go into a discussion of anthropology or, but I mean, human beings at some point figured out we can chase these critters across the savannah. We can chase these critters across the steppe, or we can gather them up and keep them inside a fence, and then they're always there, and we don't have to go out and get them. So it is interesting. This has been done elsewhere in the United States, like you just pointed out. Correct. But this is a thing. I've watched this internationally.
Right.
People, this is not brand new.
This is not. This has been around. We are definitely way behind the eight ball
in terms of...
compared to other nations.
Do you think it's because our fisheries are better than theirs? So
it's quite possible that, yes, because harvesting was both accessible, affordable, and so prevalent. And our season goes year-round. You know, we can harvest pretty much year-round in other areas like Iceland or Norway, where they can only harvest, you know, so many months out of the year before the ice caps, you know, come in and ice flows take over and you can't get back out. I think that kind of forced them to adapt these technologies early. Same with New Zealand. New Zealand is a very big nation that has a ton of aquaculture and has really developed a lot. They were forced to, I believe, you know, similar, like what you were saying, is they required to because they cannot harvest year-round, whereas the Gulf has had this access year-round. We're just getting to a point now where it's not quite as feasible for commercial fishermen to get out and harvest all the time.
Like, and there's more demand, I would imagine,
and
now.
And more demand. Demand has grown a lot, and we have a substantial amount of demand for fish product in the United States that we cannot fulfill. So I believe it's a very large number. I don't want to say the wrong number, but it's something like 85% of our fish is actually imported from other regions.
Wow.
A lot of it farmed.
Well, because that's what got me thinking about the international part. I'm a big salmon fan.
Right.
Atlantic salmon first, but I like the Pacific salmons as well.
Right.
But I realized, too, when I'm buying this in the store, it's a product of Chile. It's a product of Norway. These are people. This is aquaculture.
Right.
I mean, this is not Sven going out and catching the salmon, like in, you know, wearing his wool sweater or whatever, looking like a Viking.
Right.
It's Sven going out to an enclosure where they've raised these salmon.
And these are massive enclosures. So that's the commercial scale aquaculture that they're doing over there, whereas ours is definitely more of a individual. Small scale, you know.
Who would have thought? I mean, we grow. You know, I got a buddy in the business, and know a lot of people in it. We grow oysters.
Oh yes,
on oyster farms, and I still don't know if that's Oyster Ranch and oyster farmer. But that's probably farming. But I mean, that's a thing that we figured out how to do.
Correct.
Something that was normally wild harvested, but now
And right now, oyster aquaculture is the only aquaculture currently ongoing in Gulf waters. There's other, obviously, lots of other aquaculture happening on shore, like we had discussed earlier, in ponds, in recirculating systems, whereas wild aquaculture, like what we're trying to do and demonstrating right now, is only oysters are the only species that are being farmed.
And that was one of the things you did. You talked about you got redfish, red drum, but you also had oysters.
Right.
So how'd they do?
One of the issues we had
isn't with, it too saline, or could, I mean, is that
it's very
saline. That's a hyper saline. Yeah,
it's average salinity out there, and it pretty much doesn't change year round. Is about 32 to 34 parts per thousand, which is open water salinity. So it does not get very much fresh water.
But I guess the oyster drills can't get to them.
The
up
oyster
there.
Drills can't get to them, okay. Up there because they're
that's
hanging.
Right.
They're basically hanging in baskets off of the platform. They're suspended in the water column, so they're not necessarily getting predated. The big question we have right now is: are they getting enough food? Because that part where we are, where our site is located, and I think it's just a site issue. Where our site is located, we aren't getting a lot of that Mobile Bay freshwater influence. So you're not getting a lot of the phytoplankton and other microscopic
because you know it comes out and takes a right turn, right?
Exactly. It hooks to the right, to the west, and then it goes around Dolphin Island. And we're on the other side of Dixie Bar, south of Fort Morgan. So we kind of get blocked from receiving all that nutrient pulse.
And y'all can go look at, if you, whatever we're talking about, go look at satellite images when we have a plume of, it's easy to see when we have a plume of fresh water come out, and it comes out the mouth of the bay, and it goes right turn, Clyde.
It's like chocolate water.
Yep, and there it goes to the right. so you could, I mean, that problem could be solved. You could move it to a higher nutrient plume.
Correct. Okay. And we were sort of limited, not a bit limited on where we were going to put our site, just because it's the first one. We weren't really sure what we were doing when we were first setting this up. So we allowed NOAA to help guide us into where a good site would be to set up this demonstration based on the engineering. And engineering really took priority on site for this specific demonstration project. We definitely have recommendations on what would be better sites for future. We're kind of shoehorned into this site because we went through the permitting process, and please don't ever want to go through that again.
Well, that sounds so
for a
fun.
New site.
Dr. McDonald,
that
actually,
was
that
a
sounds
year of
permitting process. That sounds
heartburn.
Fun.
So I'd rather not go through that again, but we definitely can provide recommendations for better sites in terms of the species that we're growing. So again, oysters, we're not entirely sure how they are going to do at our site in particular.
But I mean, still we could, but redfish, we'll get back to that.
Redfish are, They survived.
I get some questions from the text line for you here. This one earlier, High Plains Drifter on the text line said, fishing the Conde Cavalier tournament this weekend. Nice. Can I fish near the farm, or are there restrictions?
There are no restrictions in terms of fishing in or around the farm. Sorry, I don't mean to say in, because please don't catch my redfish out of the pens.
Yes.
We
but
would not
it.
Appreciate that.
Believe me, I've been picking Dr. McDonald's brain for how much bait is around
right.
That bait.
Oh, the bait is insane. We were talking earlier, greenback, shad, Bermuda chub, anything like that. They are just surrounding that.
Break it's out the sabiki rigs.
It's
time.
Basically in an oasis out there. Unfortunately, the platform is not deployed right now. We have already pulled it out for the season. It will go back in the water in November. But we want to encourage people to fish around it. We want more people to see the platform, to get an idea of what it is, understand what we're doing, and that it kind of helps people get a better sense of what a potential aquaculture project could look like for the state of Alabama. If, This is opposed to these offshore 60-mile out, you know, massive commercial farms, which most people will never see in their lifetime. Yeah,
and some of them, they were, I don't know what they're growing now, they're growing what I call dolphin or mahi.
Right, right.
At one point, because the growth rates I heard on that were insane, how
they're
fast
crazy.
They...
Yeah, and they put a lot of effort into feeding, but a lot of those are also like submerged pens, and so you'll never see them. And they also typically will block those off from access because they don't want anyone accessing the pens. But we encourage people to stop by.
Okay, and another question here. What do y'all do with the harvested redfish?
The harvested redfish, the original plan is what we would like to do, and I'll kind of throw this out there as sort of a call for anyone interested in opportunities. The original plan was we would like to bring on trainees to sort of work with us and learn the process of raising these fish out on site. And then at the end of the season, those trainees would then take the fish to market, set their own prices, sell prices, and then keep whatever profits come off of the sales. And that what we're the people we're trying to recruit for trainees are people who have their own vessel, can access the site themselves, have an interest in learning the trade. And
why am I 54 years old and doing the trade? Where was that job when I was in my 20s?
We're all figuring it out. I'm in.
I got to work, but I'm in.
It's a shame that we're just now getting to this point to where, you know, this hasn't been around for longer, but I'm glad it's starting now, and I'm so happy to be a part of it. It's very exciting, but I can provide contact information for your listeners or anyone who might be interested
in doing
that and signing up.
That sounds so cool.
Yes. So that was the original plan. Unfortunately, this year, and if y'all have been listening, y'all probably heard me discuss how our fish were pretty small this year and pretty undersized. And so what we decided to do was just donate them to, we had two fish processing houses that we just gave them the fish. And what we told them was, basically, if you'll just provide us some feedback in terms of what you were able to sell the fish for and just some information on how successful you were able to sell the fish, what you sold it for, whether you processed it or sold it whole, just those sorts of questions. And in exchange, we provided them the fish that we had.
Is there something that goes through there when, I know this is experimental, but would it be X number of redfish or pounds of redfish coming in that you say these are aquaculture and not wild, like game fish? Because people are going to ask too, this is kind of an angler question, would this reduce pressure on these game fish species that we chase?
That I'm not sure. I guess it depends on whether people are fishing for food or fishing for just for pleasure.
We're both.
In both. but if you're just looking to access Gulf redfish for dinner, then I would say so. I will say that I personally ate quite a few pounds of these fish, and they were small and absolutely delicious.
Oh, they're best.
They tasted to me very similar to like a speckled trout. Some very light, very clean flesh, no parasites. They were lovely. And they were just really small. So typically in what we kind of came to discover on these with these fish markets is that the general public doesn't want to buy whole fish. They want to buy fillets generally. They don't want to mess with filleting the fish. I understand. I'm a little different. I prefer whole fish.
I'm used to seeing what my food. I like to see that my food had a face.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And very similar. I want to. And also just like, you know, is it fresh? Is it you know, that sorts of things. But generally, the general public tends to not want to buy a whole fish. So because of they were so small, the fillets were pretty puny, and they sold them for like $3 a pound or, you know, something really, really cheap. But to answer your question in terms of aquaculture produced versus wild caught, there is a law that we followed in the state of Alabama that you have to differentiate.
Right. That's why I was asking. Yeah,
and these are undersized fish. So
yeah, they're rat reds. They're not legal. They're not 16.
Yeah, you do not want to get caught with these fish without any sort of documentation that this is an aquaculture fish. So what we do is we tag every single one of our fish harvested with an individually numbered tag. And then that says, this is an aquaculture fish. We caught it on, you know, harvested this day from this site. And then we provide that information to Marine Resources, and then they can go and check. And we provide bill of sale sort of to, even though we didn't sell, we gave them away this time, but to the fish houses so they can prove that.
Good stuff.
That's where it came from.
Coming right back. More Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
154 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Let's check in with my buddy David McCrary at LCM Motor Cars. And it sounds like, I mean, we've been talking inventory all week, and you have even more inventory on the way now.
We do. We got a truck in last night, so it's I think I need to buy a transport truck, to be honest with you, what I'm paying for all these things. We've got a really good inventory. We had five vehicles come in yesterday afternoon, so or late yesterday evening, and one of them is one of the nicest F-150s you've ever seen. It's white with tan guts. It's got the hard fiberglass cover on the back of it. It's a one-owner. Truck was born and raised in Florida. It's a really, really nice truck. And then we've got a couple other vehicles, Corolla, and a couple other things came in.
All right. Well, tell folks how to check out those vehicles online and in person.
Website, lcmmotorcars.com. Everything's got the new photo booth with all the pictures that turned out really well. Very proud of that. You can come see us in person. We're at Highway 90 and Plantation. It's 1 mile south of I-10, exit 15A, with the third red light on the left. Or just give us a call, 251-375-0068.
Hey, thanks, David.
All right, buddy. Have a good day.
Hey, you too. There he goes, the man behind LCM Motor Cars, David McCrary. Got just a minute or two left here with Dr. Ashley McDonald, Dolphin Island Sea Lab, Fish Rancher.
Fish Rancher.
And so the schedule is back. It's out right now during hurricane season, the Fish Corral.
Fish are out. They are currently, we have just started a new spawning session over at TC Mac, Thad Cochran Marine Aquaculture Center. They'll be ready to get back in the water as soon as we get that platform back in November. And hopefully we'll have a much more smoother harvest this year with a few more hitting the market in June.
And so the idea here is for you to show the feasibility of this. If correct. People want to, if people, because I, people on the text line saying, what if I wanted to do this for a living? Also, people want to have a co-op between the radio station and themselves. So if we need a new plan for submerged mahi pen 45 miles out, this person I know likes to fish like I do. We can't, by the way, Brandon, you can't fish your own supply. You don't make any money if we're out there.
I mean, it's a guaranteed success all day, right?
If we're constantly dragging baits through our fish pen, we don't need, but several people are saying, what's the, you know, how does somebody get into this or whatever? So that's what you're trying to show is feasibility.
That's what we're trying to show is feasibility. In terms of how somebody gets into it, I think we're still haven't quite gotten to that point yet. We really want to get through this demonstration project to see, just so that we can inform people, you know, like, what do you need to start in terms of investment? There's a very large upfront cost, obviously, to getting the materials, getting your site ready.
Getting permitted sounds like it's not exactly a walk in the park.
It's not an easy walk in the park. We would love to get to a point where, you know, we could actually possibly assist people to get through the permitting process. We are all about that. Aquaculture is coming, and we want to do it in a way that's not only feasible, it's environmentally responsible, it's sustainable, it's providing local species to our local economy. We're building our own local economy. We're building these jobs that are back. Making the Gulf a place to get our seafood again and recognized for that seafood. So that's definitely part of our priorities.
Well, I'm pulling for you.
Oh, thank you.
And the whole crew. People want to go online and follow this and go, where do they go?
So there is, if you go to the Dolphin Island Sea Lab website, dizzle.edu, and there is a webpage that is attached to the website that is just for the, it's called IMTA is the acronym. It stands for Integrated Multitrophic Aquaculture.
That's easy for you to say.
Yeah. which basically just means we're growing three species in the same same aquaculture platform. So IMTA project, if you just Google that, Dauphin Island Sea Lab, IMTA aquaculture, it'll pop up for sure.
Good stuff. Great to see you.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Paul Feinbaum next.